So some may remember we were running a survey about 6 months ago, asking what you thought you'd like to see in a video game store. That survey has been done for a while, but we thought we'd pick another name from the pool for our fan appreciation episode. Congratulations, Ebhead, you were the winner. We sent you an email, so please send us your address so we can give you your Famicom Dojo Season 1 DVD. If we're ever down in your neck of the woods, we'll definitely try and check out Galloping Ghost. For this episode, we also have an exclusive audio bonus at famicomdojo.tv/podcast/51, so be sure to check it out after the show. Onto the podcast. He wants...
Are we going to edit that?
Yeah, we're going to edit that.
Okay. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how's it going, babe?
It's going pretty good. I'm cleaning out my video game closet.
Oh, no, then we can keep your video games in a closet now?
Well, since I got married, you know. Well, they used to be all over the house and, like...
Right.
I don't know. And before that, I guess you could say on display, you know, like in video cabinets and things. You know, where any person walking... Now, I'm not exactly sure who I was trying to impress by this.
Okay, yourself probably. It's kind of like No More Heroes, right? You got the shrines all over the house to.
No. Yeah. And I was looking, and I we've talked about this before, but like you know I can keep, you know my wife's cool with me being a gamer, but I guess I'm a closeted gamer because
you're literally in the closet.
I keep my games in the closet.
Well, I guess there aren't any girls you could possibly impress, so.
Yeah. No. My daughter would be impressed. But I was putting games away, and like most of my games fit really well into. I bought like this DVD storage system, which you know like has slots for DVDs, and you know most of my PlayStation 2 and Wii and you know those type of games fit very nicely into that case. But what doesn't is kind of the bigger games, the bigger boxed games.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, most games, you know, have always, at least for consoles, had a very kind of standard video game size.
Oh, I remember this actually. Back in the day, it was like this huge, like bigger than 8.5 by 11 box thing, mostly to stop people from just stealing it and walking out of the store with it, I imagine. But yeah.
But most console games are, you know, pretty much the same size, but occasionally a company would come along and go, we're going to do something a little bit different. Like, a lot of the games that I instantly recognized were working designs games. You ever play any of those?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Name a title. Maybe I have.
Lunar.
Okay. I didn't actually play Lunar, but there was this whole thing at college once where a bunch of guys got together over the summer and, like, played it. Like from Friday through Sunday, to see who could beat it first. But you know, they picked up like used copies at, used game stores and stuff.
Oh, I see. Well, this one was amazing. It came in like an embossed box that was like the size of, I don't know, 3 PlayStation games, and inside was a hardbound manual with like, I don't know, like fake leather bound, you know. And a cloth map.
Wow.
And like soundtrack CD and a making of video. Just like all kinds of stuff in there.
So if I'm to get this right, the theme of this episode is added content.
Added content. And we're not talking about the type of added content you get now where it's like download this update for added content. But true. Like actual physical goods and things in a game.
Oh wow, okay, all right. So before we get into that, really quick, I do want to say that this is our viewer appreciation episode. One episode late.
We appreciate you 1 month late.
Yeah, 1 week late. 1 week late. Well, actually, it's more like 2 months late because we're like 7 episodes behind our normal schedule. Plus 1 week. Yeah, it's about 2 months. Well, anyways, so...
We appreciate
all the time, though.
Yeah, it's true. We do. We do. We're going to especially appreciate you today because three episodes ago, we had a DLC podcast drive to let us know what you wanted to see in the show with optional donations. And people took us up on it. And we got some good suggestions, which we're going to do later in the show.
Yes.
I'm going to be reviewing the Silent Hill movie at the behest of one of our listeners. And then we'll read off the other ones that are shorter to do with once we discuss more about these added content contents.
Wasn't one of the DLC suggestions the Sean has to wear pants one?
Surprisingly, no.
Sean doesn't have to wear pants.
Nobody requested either. So why am I wearing these pants? All right, that's better.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
We'll go into
the no pants cast.
If we title it that, we're going to get put in a different category again. Okay.
You're right. I'm sorry.
So these extras now for console games, they were a pretty rare thing, at least in this country.
Okay.
I'm trying to. I remember one of the greatest like extras like was that Earthbound originally came in a huge box.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was just if there were two editions of it and one was a special edition, but I know that my brother got this edition in just like a huge box because it came with like a full sized player's guide.
Oh wow. That's
crazy. And the player's guide was like a scratch and sniff guide.
What?
I think they also in Nintendo Power when they were like advertising the game also had like some scratch and sniff stickers. I don't know why they like it's nothing connected to the original game, but it was just this guide. It's not the first game to have a scratch and sniff guide, of course.
I can think of one. What are you thinking of?
I'm thinking of Leather Goddess of Phobos. Are you thinking of something else?
I am. When did that come out?
Gosh. Early 80s. 82, maybe? 84? Oh, I don't know. It was in the days of Infocom.
Oh, Infocom.
You know Infocom.
I know Infocom because of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text adventure, which had all kinds of goodies. I don't think there was Scratch and Sniff in that one. But they had stuff like microscopic space fleet in what I presume was an empty plastic bag. But you never really could tell, could you? Peril-sensitive sunglasses. What else is in there?
The peril-sensitive stuff. It was it was like a chunk of pocket fluff.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, all things that were like in the game as objects. It's hilarious.
There was the order for destruction of Arthur Dent's house.
Oh, wow. Really? Man, I kind of remember, but you know, it's been like 20 years, so 30 years.
It 25. Came with a button that said "Don't panic," printed in large friendly letters.
Yes, yes.
And I actually owned this. Did you actually have a physical copy of this?
Yeah, definitely. That's how I remember it so well, is because I hadn't read the books yet. I was maybe like 7 or 8 when I found this game.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, whoa, they wrote a book based on that game.
Oh,
but,
no.
But I mean, since Douglas Adams really kind of wrote... I mean,
it's the radio play, the book, the game.
Yes, but I remember that the back of the box listed all these feelies. I think it was the back of the box. It might have been in the manual. I don't remember.
Feelies?
Oh, yeah. Infocom called them feelies.
Oh,
because
my goodness.
All of their games were just text, so... You know, there are no real graphics up until the very end of the company.
It's VR3, so there's like audio, visual, and touch. Although I guess there weren't so much audio with the text adventures.
Yeah. So they called them feelies.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And the game, the back of the box said that the box contains no tea.
Oh, that is hilarious for those who played this
game.
Because
if you've played this game, that's a very important thing to one of the puzzles in the game.
It is not possible to have tea and no tea at the same time unless ...
Yes.
Yes. Oh my god, what a great game. You can play this. We did this Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy podcast like way back in 2008. before this show and before before this podcast version of the show and before the PowerCast. So we should probably link that in the show notes where you can play like a 20th anniversary graphic version on the BBC website if it's still up. And there's other ways to play it too, through FROTS and such. Yeah. Oh, we should link that.
Yeah.
Fun game.
Yeah.
No feelies though.
We did before, but yeah.
Yeah.
I found a really awesome site. I owned about 4 Infocom games back in the day. 2 of them I got used for like a software swap meet, so they didn't have their feelies in. But the 2 that I did have
feelies.
Come on, this is a real thing.
I know. It's just so funny.
I'm gonna send you a link that we should put up on the podcast that just has a gallery of all these feelies. Oh God, if we had feely gallery to our search tags, we're gonna get put in the other podcast category again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so like Infocom did it great with that, and a lot of other games. Like you played some of the original Sierra games, right?
Oh yeah, so that's what I was thinking of. Was I know that Leisure Suit Larry 6, Love for Sale, was it 6 or 7? Yeah. Six.
Love for Sale was 7.
7. How was
that? The last one.
Darn it! You're right. What was 6?
6 was Shape Up or Slip Out. Gosh,
man,
I feel dirty.
You should. So Love for Sale, yeah, it came with this like numerically based scratch and sniff card. I might actually have it right here. Let me look because I bought this like complete series set. Oh, I know why I got confused because there's only 6 games, but there's no Leisure Suit Larry 4. So far, I have a
Sean
copy
is
of like
rummaging
a
through his drawer right now, searching for a scratch and sniff manual to Leisure Suit Larry 7.
I have a copy of the LSL 3 guidebook, which that's how you defeat the copy protection. Just go to a Xerox machine.
Yeah. What was weird was the book. I bought the game fairly late on. I think I bought it at a software. At Babbage's. That tells you how long ago it was. And inside the box was like a Xeroxed manual. And I'm like, come on, guys.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I've bought a couple games that have a Xeroxed manual because when they hit like the greatest hit section.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they hit like the $10 mark, the companies just were like, okay, this manual is absolutely required to be able to beat the game, so we can't just leave it out. We're not at the point where we can attach it as a PDF. You know?
Oh, I found it. CyberSniff 2000 trademark. So there's 1 through 9 on here. Let me try number 1. Well, I'll scratch this off throughout the show to let you know what they smell like. So let's go with number 1 right now.
All right.
It smells like still works.
That's good.
Kind of like a sea breeze. It is blue, so I'm guessing that's what it is. I can probably look these up in the manual and find out later.
Just be careful if it's a Leisure Suit Larry game.
I know. One of them is not good, as I recall.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I had this handy.
It's almost like we planned.
It's not, though.
I know.
You planned.
But it's almost like
it sure seems that way, doesn't it? Oh, the Laffy utilities, man, this thing had everything. You got to run it on DOS, though, is the only bad thing.
How can you even run the Laffy utilities? That was like, that's the first time I've ever seen a product licensed as a parody of an operating system.
Right? That's so funny. All right, so
we'll
what
talk
other
about that later, yeah.
Yeah, what other bits of software came with stuff like this. Like the thing ones I think of the most are the PC games, but like I said, in America they really didn't happen for console games, but they happened more recently with
they happened in Japan though.
Okay.
I'm gonna tell you the best feeling ever.
Alrighty.
Should I use the word when it's a non-Infocom game? Yes, I like it. I like feelies. Okay. That's the clip that's gonna be used. All right, but there's a wonderful game. Wonderful is in quotation marks. But have you heard of Real Sound? It's a Sega Saturn game. I think it got a Dreamcast port as well.
No.
It was made by Studio Warp. Are you familiar with them?
Studio Warp. What have they made?
Their most famous one was the D series, like D and D2.
Oh, okay. I've heard of those games, but I never played them.
They did Enemy Zero.
Sure, sure.
Okay. I think those are the only three that actually got released in America. Yes. And they're no longer around. Their last one, D2, on the Dreamcast. Well, actually, I don't know if any of their games other than D ever actually sold very much.
Yeah, D2, I've seen a lot of it used game stores in Japan, so...
It was way overproduced. So was Enemy Zero. Like, it's a game that you can find for 8 yen.
Yikes.
But actually, the Enemy Zero, the English version, is kind of expensive to buy. And it's the only... It's one of two 4-disc Saturn games.
Hmm.
The other being Panzer Dragoon Saga. Right. Anyway. So Real Sound, Kaze no Regret, is a game that one-upped Infocom.
Oh. Okay.
Well, you know, Infocom had no graphics.
Except for the text, right?
Except for the text. And Kaze no Regret went one step further, and it has no text either.
Oh, that's the wrong direction. That's like a one down, not a one up.
Yeah, but they one-upped them in minimalism.
Oh, Do they have no feelies?
Anyway.
Was there no game? Because I've released no game before.
Yes. I'm constantly releasing no Famicom Dojo video.
We'll talk about more about that at the end of the show, I think, though. People will be happy about that.
But anyway, yeah. So Real Sound Kaze no Regret was for Sega Saturn, and it was for Dreamcast, and it was designed by Kenji Ino, which is a really nice guy. I met him at a party. I've got his business card. But anyway.
Nice.
Yeah. Got to throw that in there. But it was a game that relied entirely on sound.
Wow.
It was an audio adventure game. So you'd listen to this drama unfolding. And you'd preferably listen to it with headphones so you could indicate spatial cues for where things were. But it wasn't necessary to beat the game, you know. But you'd move with the controller. You'd hit buttons and make choices, and it was a game that was intended to provide a good gaming experience for players who could see, and also for maybe the first time for blind players.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
And of course, it was a huge flop. But
well.
But they included some of the most amazing feelies ever.
Right. Also good for blind people.
Yeah,
I hope.
And one of the feelies was a Braille manual.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. And the other one was it included seeds.
What?
Well, one of the concepts in the game was to be like a growing some plants, I believe. It's a game that's all audio and all Japanese, so I haven't really gotten very far in it, so unfortunately. But yeah, it included a packet of seeds and with the instructions that you should grow them. It was a bag of herb seeds, and the game itself came in like kind of a transparent box with clouds and stuff. I don't know. The game's kind of that game. Unlike D2, has become a bit of a collector's item just for kind of its novelty.
Sure. Wow.
They were making a sequel to it, but it never got released because
the first one did so badly.
Warp kind of went out of business.
Yeah.
After D2, although Kenji Ito is still making games. He did the sound design for Newtonica on the iPhone, which is a fun game. Released a game on WiiWare called, I forget the English title. I think it was like You and Me and the Cubes or something.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, he's still around. But yeah, that's what I can think of for some unique feelies. But Japanese games in general, especially RPGs, often include like weird stuff, you know. And I guess we'll talk about PC games.
All right. Well, before I do that, let me scratch up number two here.
Okay. How's it smell?
Definitely coconut.
Good. Good.
I'm looking at this booklet too, and there's like phone numbers for helplines. I wonder if these numbers still work. We should call one and see what happens.
No. Okay. No.
There's U.S. Direct Sales. There's the hint line. Well, it's 900 number, 75 cents per minute. Must be 18 years or older. Probably won't call that one. Oh, well.
I'm guessing none of these exist anymore. Anyway.
And there's a fax line, too. Anyway, well, PC games I don't know so much about, though, besides the one we've talked about already, but, like, modern-day console games, you can definitely get crazy pack-ins, like a Master Chief helmet for Halo 3, I think, but that you pay a premium for that stuff now.
Yeah, they used to be, included for free with the game, and of course, one of the reasons why was copy protection.
Oh,
as
sure.
As you were talking about those manuals, maybe not the scratch and sniff one, but like a lot of the manuals were required to beat the games. You know, you'd have to look up things, like there'd be phone numbers in the book, or some would even be more blatant about it. They'd be like, turn to page 34 in the book, and what is the fifth word? I remember games like that. Or copy protection wheels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that. So, a lot of them were just put into for copy protection. Or, because piracy was so incredibly rampant in early PC games. And, well, I suppose back then, Apple II and Commodore games.
Well, they're technically PCs if you want to get super technical.
I mean, as Al Lowe always mentions, they sold more hint books than they did actual copies of the first Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah. He did mention that during his Kickstarter campaign, too.
Yep. And the first two Larry games both sold more hint books than they sold actual games.
Yeah.
And then, so for the third Larry game, the book was a huge bit of copy protection. You cannot beat the game without the book, and it was before the era of game fax. So unless you had a friend who was willing to Xerox, and it was a big book, it was like 45 pages.
Yeah, I'm holding the Xerox copy right now.
There you go. You know, you couldn't beat the game otherwise.
I owe Al some money, I think.
Yeah. Well, I kickstarted his thing. Hope they make that.
They'll make. I mean, you know, they got more than enough money, and they'll finish, right?
Yeah, if they don't spend all the money on
hookers and blackjack.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Time for number three. I think this is second here.
Okay, number three.
Smell. Is it leather? What is that?
I can see that being a thing in the Leisure Suit Larry game. Yes. Let's go with leather.
Maybe it's pleather. I don't know. Anyway.
Either would work.
Sure. Yeah, that's... There's nothing in like the guide itself to like give me a hint. I actually have to play the game, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So...
And there's one further category of like, bonus goodies.
Okay.
If you pre-order goodies. Mm. If you pre-order through this company, you'll get this goodie. Like, this is a GameStop exclusive pre-order thing. You know?
Like DLC content that becomes for sale later on through other means. Yep. Like Best Buy will do that too.
Yeah, those have kind of gone away though. Now it's like, if you pre-order through this company, you get this costume unlocked.
Right.
And that goes into a whole nother rant that I don't want to go into right now.
Yeah, well, we've gone into that rant before in previous episodes, I think.
Lots of episodes. Yeah. But they still do the goody stuff, definitely. But now it's like special edition. Like,
yeah, the only goodies I get in a regular game are like ads for other games. Oh, that's not entirely it's not entirely true. So because they had this DLC thing for new games, like if you play like a BioWare game, you have like an online pass or like an extra character or an extra mission. That you get for free with a new game, but you know that's part of the inserts. You got to put in the code and get your download copy and be all authorized and stuff. But if you do that used, no dice.
Well, I mean, I guess in that way that makes sense too. as the extra stuff is always to prevent, well, in this case, used games, but in earlier cases, piracy.
Yeah.
All right, so as a question to our listeners, what have you gotten in a game that was really unique or amazing or fun? Oh, regular box game. In Japan, No More Heroes game came with a comic book of No More Heroes, and it came with a little keychain that was the beam katana.
That's so unfair. Like Sonic Adventure 2 came in a really, really nice 50th anniversary box, as I recall. Yeah. And we didn't get anything like that in the States.
50th anniversary.
15th. 15th. Okay. 1-5. No. Doctor Who, that's 50th. That's coming up. That's that next year.
Oh, my gosh. I remember celebrating the 25th anniversary.
Wasn't that the Five Doctors?
No. Wait.
What was it, 20th? Oh, I don't even know.
That was 20th. 25th was Silver Nemesis.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Okay. Wow.
And half of the listeners
and
shut
scene.
Up.
All right, time for number four, then, I think.
There they go. Okay. Yes.
Number four. All right, it's pink.
Uh-oh.
All right, that is sunscreen.
Oh, okay.
Definitely sunscreen. Should we go into our podcast DLC then, since we brought up DLC for...
Good. Yep.
For games. Okay, so like as we mentioned, we ran a DLC campaign in episode 48 and kept it open until now, and we got some nice response. Let's go through the little things first, and then we'll get to our big DLC. Does that sound good?
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Our very first donation was it just said no shame, which I think is hilarious because it is indeed a shameless promotion.
Yes. And I think that we have met our end of that deal by being extremely shameless.
Yes, okay. The No Shame promotion for the DVD has long since ended, but we're going to come up with a different one, I think.
Yes.
So stay tuned to this podcast. Wait, to find out more, please pay 99 cents. No. We got one from Ugly Joe.
Ugly Joe!
Yeah, he wants the Make Vink Bring Back the Old Man character DLC. Which,
ooh,
yeah.
Oh, the old man character. He's kind of in retirement right now, but...
Yeah, he is old, after all.
He is. Well, I'm going to see if I can convince him.
Okay.
No, actually...
We're being coy for a reason.
Yeah, there is actually plans afoot.
Multiple plans.
We had only one plan.
Oh, we have one specific
before,
plan.
But then when I saw this DLC and saw that someone actually cares,
yeah,
we made a second plan as well. So if you like the old man, stay tuned. If you don't like the old man, sorry.
We got another one for the gentleman who sent us a picture of his daughter wearing our Famicom Dojo shirt just huge. Donated for mentioning that on air. So you're welcome. Wow. And thank you. Well, then last but not least, we got one from Daniel Hathcock who we'll say he gave us $2 because he very specifically lays out what they're for. The first dollar is to mention his name on air, which we just did. Let's do it again. It'd be like 50 cents a mention. Daniel Hathcock. See, now it's 33 cents and infinity.
Oh, no, we're
decimal.
Cheapening the name by mentioning it more.
Who, Daniel Hathcock?
Oh, I was going off to the store the other day, and Daniel Hathcock!
Now it's 20 cents a piece. All right, anyway. Oh, yeah, we also have to mention that we're BFFs, which is Back to the Future fans, obviously.
No. We are definitely best friends forever.
Okay.
But we just can't get our schedules to sync up and hang out. So,
so we do this podcast specifically for him.
So that he can talk to us. Because, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But I'm wearing one-third of a Daniel Hathcock heart bracelet right now.
Oh.
Not bracelet, necklace, sorry.
I'm wearing and that. As well as no pants. So there you go. Anyway.
Did someone buy the Awkward Silence DLC? That's what just happened. Yep. Okay.
No one paid for this DLC, but there was definitely a request to have fewer exasperated sighs, which we did cut down on as of last episode. So that one got paid. a little earlier than expected. But the big one, not the highest paid one, but definitely the biggest time investment, and with the other donations we were able to pay for this to get a copy so I could do this, is to watch the Silent Hill movie and give a take on the ending, especially. So I have done this. And there's one more bit of DLC that we got, which should help me out in this quest, is the More Syndra DLC.
The More Syndra DLC.
Yeah, we should get her on.
Yes, which totally beat out the Less Syndra DLC.
Yes, which no one bought. No one bought the Less.
I was going to ask, did anybody actually buy that?
No.
Wow.
No.
That download was really fast.
Wow. It's like we planned it.
Oh, it's almost like that, isn't it?
Shh. What the hell, Vink? Come on. Not on the air.
So, all right, we'll talk about Silent Hill, but before we do, I need to scratch up number 5 here.
Okay.
Oh, that's like sand or some kind of spice.
All right.
Turmeric? Anyway.
It's a spice.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that was supposed to be. Anyway, all right. So there's 4 of those left. Anyway, so back in episode 7, episode 11, we had video game movies and movies about video games, and we mentioned that there was a Silent Hill movie, but neither of us had seen it. And in the comments, Syndra mentioned that we should have really pulled her in for the episode to talk about it. So now that I have been tasked to watch it, I was like, hey, do you want to do this review with us? And it's like, great, we have to have someone buy some Syndra DLC first. And fortunately, that was...
Great. was
So, welcome. Sure. Welcome back.
Hey, boys.
Hey.
Glad I can help out in any way I can with certain niche areas.
Yep. I should put my pants back on.
don't go to any special likes for me, Sean.
All right.
Come on. We're all friends here.
All right.
We all know each other here.
Oh, my. So I saw this movie. Before I talk about the movie itself, though, I had to pick it up at Preplayed. I guess I could have torrented it, but I had to make someone an honest buck, I guess. And first thing I noticed was the cover art. And since it's next to Silence of the Lambs, it was really obvious what they were trying to mimic there. And the shot's just like of a face with like no mouth, which is super similar to like the face with the butterfly over it for Silence of the Lambs. Just thought I'd put that out there. But it's a shot that's not even in the movie, which kind of makes me... It's kind of like how I feel about the adaption in general. But where should we start, Syndra?
Usually the conversations of video game-based movies always seem to come back to how does it rank up? How does it give tribute to the game that it's based off of? How does it flow in terms of being a movie based on a game with the original material from the game?
Well, here's the problem for me. I didn't play the game. I was just asked to watch the movie, so I did. I think it gives me an interesting perspective because I get to like just judge it as cinema instead of
How is it a cinema, Sean?
I'm rubbing my temples in disgust right now. Yes, Sean, please tell us, how was it from a normal person's perspective? How was it as general cinema?
Well, for about the first hour and 15 minutes, nothing happens. There's just a lot of screaming. Rhoda Mitchell's the main character chasing after her daughter, Sharon, who's been having dreams of a place called Silent Hill. And she's like, they explain it a little bit, but not enough for my taste, that she's like trying to take her daughter there against the express wishes of her husband, played by Sean Bean. Did I mention it was Rhoda Mitchell? Yeah, I think I did.
You did.
So they take her there. And there's this cop that looks kind of like a T-1000. I was pretty sure she was going to have like spikes come out of her hands at any point. I didn't expect her to be blonde under that helmet, but that worked out, I guess. but as soon as they hit the point where they like run into the townspeople, that's when like, you know, there was like characters and like dialogue, because it was like no dialogue, just like Sharon and screaming as like bad guys, which I assume are like villains in the game, would pop out one after another for, you know, an hour and 15 minutes. So I was getting a little bored right up until we saw Alice Krieg as the headmistress priestess of this small town. I'm like, oh, now it's getting interesting. There's fortunately about an hour left in the movie at that point. So
That's a Roger Ebert style review right there.
That very much is. That very much is.
I liked the line where I didn't expect her to be blonde, but it worked out.
Hold on. Before we get into Syndra's views, I'll scratch out number 6 here.
Okay.
Is it officially scratched?
It is scratched. Wow, what is... That is not pleasant. What? It's peach colored, but it's not peach smelling. Yeah, it smells like socks, like dirty socks.
Yep, wow, that is about probably the first peach that you can get.
Yeah.
Probably what it is. Okay.
All right. So, what did you think of Silent Hill?
Honestly, I thought at its core, it was doing some decent justice to the games that it was based off of. You can tell that from a person who has played at least the first couple Silent Hills, I got through 1 through 4. I played Homecoming. I have yet to play Downpour. I never got to Shattered Memories.
Oh my god, how many of these games are there?
There are quite a few.
There's a lot.
There's quite a few. But the original 4 were what most people consider the core series. And this particular movie was meant to be based off of the first game.
Okay.
And actually ended up having all of the monsters from the second game.
Interesting.
Pyramid Head
was in it. Yeah. From the second game. He was, and honestly, yeah, the most Silent Hill 2 being people's opinion, the strongest of the Silent Hill games, based on story, based on gameplay, just based on so many things. Pyramid Head became such an iconic figure for the Silent Hill series that they decided, oh, hey, it's Silent Hill. We have to have Pyramid Head in the movie. So they just kind of threw him in there and then decided, oh, hey, there were a bunch of other very iconic monsters from Silent Hill 2. Let's use all of them. And
nurses.
Yeah, the nurses. I know both the Pyramid Head and nurses just from cosplay at conventions. And so I know that they're associated with Silent Hill, but that's about as far. And they're awesome cosplay, but I saw the nurses and they did creep me out.
There are nurses that kind of come up through various games, and they tend to have some different variations per game, but the bobblehead nurses, as most people tend to call them from the Silent Hill 2 games, are again the most iconic.
In this movie, they did mostly like a thriller type dance number or something. It was kind of creepy. And
honestly, that particular part that you are talking about, where the nurses showed up, that was strictly for the fans. They're like, okay, so we've got Pyramid Head, we've got the Straitjacket Monsters, the Grey Children that were actually from Silent Hill 1. Let's see, what else can we throw in there that's really iconic? Oh, the bobblehead nurses. Well, where the hell are we going to fit them in? Oh, the hospital. But she's not in the hospital for very long, so we kind of have to cram them all in there. And let's not make it one or two. Let's make it a whole damn hallway of them.
Yeah. So do you defeat them by turning off your light and just walking through them silently?
No, not the game. The flashlight actually does in the games have a very interesting function of it will attract monsters to you a lot quicker than if you just turn it off. Now, monsters can usually hear you walk past them, or if they bump into you, obviously they'll know you're there. But if your light is on, they're going to know exactly where you are and come straight for you. That was something that they kind of tried to interpret in the movie, which I give them props for, at least giving, you know, that kind of attention to
the movie. It's very rare when a movie director goes, I think we need to incorporate these game mechanics into our movie.
Yeah, very rare, which, again, is why I say this movie was very much a tribute to the first and second game. Mm. Now, obviously, certain things changed. In the first game, you have Harry Mason, who is the protagonist, and he's the father of Cheryl. who was the little girl. And in the movie, they decided to make the protagonist the mother, Rose, and you know, that had some fan outcry. It's like, okay, why do you need it to be a woman? You know, are you really? There were arguments that they were trying to push the idea that, oh, well, mothers have more, you know, better instincts with children than fathers do. Blah. Well, yeah, you know,
there's this line in the movie about how, like mother or like kids think of their mothers as God or whatever. Like they mention that more than once, which comes into the ending, which we'll get to that.
Yeah, and you know, that was something that they really could have done without. It was they twisted it to work out okay for the movie, but again, it was something that they really could have done with the original premise that was meant for the first game. But whatever, they warped it a bit and they kind of went with it, and you know, it worked out for the most part.
Did it? I'm wondering. Okay, so. It seemed like this whole mother-daughter story was like a pretense to like just run through the world of Silent Hill, and just have this like wonderful like eye porn. Because those visuals meant nothing to me, and so like it didn't resonate. And so for like an hour of her like running, screaming Sharon, and not finding her, of course, because if she found her, the movie would be over.
You were describing it at first, I can totally see from a outside person's perspective who has never played the games,
right,
exactly what you mean when you say the first hour was boring because all you were seeing is this woman run through the town.
Right. But if you like play the games and you like know the locales and stuff and knew what enemies were in those locales, you'd be like, oh, I bet you know, Pyramid Head's going to show up here or something like that. And then they do. And then you're like, yeah, but you know, it meant nothing to me.
And that is very true. For people who have played the games, the town layout was incredibly faithful. It was, as you said, you know, it was eye porn. It was eye candy for fans of the games who, you know, played through Silent Hill 2, and it felt, as you're watching all of this, this particular stretch of the movie is meant specifically to give focus to, hey guys, we made this very faithful to the atmosphere of the game, the fog world. And then I can tell, I will totally admit when I first heard the air raid siren go off, when I first saw this movie in theaters, I cheered a bit. I'll admit it, in the theater, I cheered a bit, and I wasn't the only one.
It's like if I ever hear like a Reaper cry anywhere, I'm just gonna like probably freak out right there.
Oh, the air raid siren from Silent Hill. It's like this delicious terror because you know what's coming.
I don't. What's coming?
What's coming is the
rust or ice, depending on the game.
Well, in the original grouping of games, the air raid siren was a pretense to the coming of the shifting of the worlds to the rust and bloodied, darker other world.
Okay, that kind of happened in the movie. Like things kind of started to dissolve and
It's meant to be pure straight up nightmare fuel.
Interesting. And then that's when Pyramid Head would show up. So gotcha. And so then they would like when you find the townspeople finally, they go into this church and they pray or whatever, and it makes the things go away. And then there's this ash, like you see a falling ash throughout the film, but don't know until you get to that halfway point precisely why there's falling ash throughout the film. So that's kind of interesting. That is an interesting device.
And that's something where that's one of the parts where it deviates from the games, because in the games that you don't actually have like these human cultists that are running about. You have like maybe one or two that are the primary or secondary antagonists, particularly from the first and third games, but all that, you know, going to the church for sanctuary, so on and so forth, that was not a part of the games. That was something created for the movies, which worked. And the ash concept, the fog world, as it's more commonly known, having the falling ash being described, explained as the fires, you know, that that closed Silent Hill that made people, you know, right, completely move out of
this,
it.
This coal fire that they, as they explained in the film.
Which, honestly, I thought that was a very interesting twist, and I liked it. It was giving some explanation, and they gave it its due. I didn't hate it. It was a fairly solid explanation as to why it was the way it was, and it worked. Mm. And that's just like, that is the feeling of what you feel in the games when you hear this air raid siren. It's like, oh God, where do I go? But there's nowhere you can go. That's the difference in the games. There's nowhere you can go to hide from the coming of Otherworld.
Except that's the church, apparently, in the movie anyway.
In the church, in the movie, they needed some place to kind of hide right. so they could develop the story right. without the fear of, oh, monsters are around or
yeah.
this,
oh, finally, that. That one bit of respite after an hour and change, yeah.
Exactly, but in the games, there's, when you're in the, when it transitions to the other world, there's no respite. That's why it's so nerve-wracking when you hear those air raid sirens. You know exactly what's going to happen. It's going to turn into a hellish, dark, bloodied place where you are constantly barraged, if not by monsters, then by pure mind screw.
Man, that pyramid head's a dick.
In the movie, they actually had this transition to show the layers of Silent Hill with the fog world, roses running through the fog world at the same time in the normal layer, the normal world, her husband, Sean Bean there, is walking through the same area. And
Yeah, we should get to that when we talk about the ending, because that's going to play heavily into the theory for that.
Exactly. Yeah, and yeah. So having something different, the minor changes, you know, with it being a female protagonist looking for a daughter rather than a male, to have, you know, have Dahlia actually be kind of a pseudo good guy rather than the absolute antagonist that she is in the first game that ended up being Christabella in the movies. The climax in the church with the barbed wire. Sean knows exactly what I'm talking about when I say the barbed wire.
I thought the tree rape scene in Evil Dead was bad.
Oh, nothing. Nothing compared to that. Everybody cringed in the theater when that happened, and I'm just like, yeah, this director knew what he was doing. You guys knew what they were doing, so.
Okay, so I think we're at a good point to talk about the ending of the film. But first, of course, it's very important we get through all these scratch and sniffs. So number 7, ahead of the ending here. Hopefully it won't smell like ash or barbed wire.
Or blood. Is it coppery?
No.
Do you smell copper? Like pennies.
I don't smell much. You like those gym mats? It smells kind of like a gym mat.
What?
Actually, I don't smell much of anything.
As a child, I never, you know, took the time to sniff gym mats either. Is that weird?
This scratch and sniff, you weren't a wrestler. No, I wasn't much of one either. Yeah, it's amazing this work at all because, you know, it's from 1997, so it's 15 years old. Scratch and sniff card.
Fair.
Yeah. All right. So the ending to Silent Hill, that's what people are probably most curious about because it was a little strange. I think before I get into my interpretation of the ending, what do I consider the ending? I guess that scene in the church and then what happens afterwards is kind of where it begins and ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Okay. So at this point, obviously, Rose has found her daughter, Sharon. She's found out the truth about her daughter, Sharon, which is that she's, spoilers, one part of, like, the childlike innocent part of...
Cheryl. Or excuse me, of Alessa.
Alessa, who was, like, born in the, like, 70s and burned as a witch and did have magical powers, so did get the townspeople a reason to fear her.
She didn't necessarily, I'll stop you there. She didn't have magical powers. It was a part, it was the town itself.
The town itself. I didn't get that at all from the movie.
It's, yeah, they didn't explain it very well, whether or not, oh, she's, you know, the reason why they burned her was because they gave the heavy hint that she was born out of wedlock.
Yeah, because she didn't have a father, so they kept making fun of her.
She didn't have a father, yeah. So she was born out of wedlock, and therefore that automatically made her a candidate for ritual sacrifice. They had to get rid of her to purify, blah, blah, blah. But they never actually gave any hints that she had, like, any kind of abilities. And in the games, she does. Because it's a whole convoluted explanation as to how she has the abilities to warp the town and so on and so forth. But
well, I don't know that dark spirit or whatever comes and like promises her that she can have her revenge. So I guess that could be the spirit of the town or something, but they didn't really explain that very well.
That's what it kind of is trying to imply. In the game, Silent Hill is this, it's an entity. It's not just a town, it's an entity in and of itself. Okay. It's the spirits of Silent Hill that are like controlling everything. And that's kind of what they implied with this quote-unquote dark spirit who came to Alessa because of her hatred and gave her these abilities.
Okay, so she didn't have any until after that point. Well, that's just weird.
Correct.
So she does something to that nurse, who wasn't a bobblehead nurse, but...
No, she actually... that was meant to be the... and it wasn't even a shout-out. It was... direct import from the game, the first Silent Hill, that was Lisa. They just kind of threw her in there, just to have her in there, but it was meant to be, you know, another reference from the first game.
Okay.
So, and, you know, so this dark entity, who is the dark spirit of Silent Hill, recognizes her hatred, attaches to her and uses her hatred to mold and warp Silent Hill into her dark image, which is why Pyramid Head is a slightly sexier version rather than the bloody butcher kind of monster that he is from the second game.
Yeah, you're right, because he does... So the ones I saw cosplaying him cosplayed the movie version then, because they were all shirtless He-Men.
Yep, and gotcha. You know what, I was there. There's good points and bad points to both, and they did kind of say, like, as an addendum, that particular Pyramid Head, because some people did kind of bitch about it, that particular version of Pyramid Head was meant to be from a female's perspective, and apparently there were enough female fans of Pyramid Head to view him as sexy, which...
My. Are you one of them?
Sure, why not?
Sure. All right, fair enough.
but so, by like you were saying, by the end of the movie, Alessa gets her revenge.
Yep.
The cult is pretty much, if not completely destroyed, completely disbanded, so it's no longer a threat.
This seemed completely destroyed. It sure seemed like it.
Oh, it sure seemed like it with the quote, spoilers, with the slaughter at the end.
Just
the walls painted red, so on and so forth. And
by that point, Rose's clothes were like purely red. Like they were white, and they got blood on them. I guess it's supposed to be some kind of like symbolic thing of her journey or whatever. But like they were just like red clothes at the end. Like it was, you know, like a pretense of it being stained. It was just red clothes.
Right. And then they have this very quiet journey out of Silent Hill that's meant to show that, okay, everything has been put back into its proper place. Mm-hmm. The hatred has been quelled. Silent Hill is now Silent Hill and the spirit that is Alessa, who we never find out what actually happens to Alessa after she gets her revenge.
Well, I have theories.
Silent Hill allows Rose and Sharon to leave because everything more or less has been resolved. Or so we think.
When they like kind of like leave into that fog world, right? And mm-hmm. and it sure seemed like when they get to that bridge she came in on that it wasn't there, but then they kind of like drift into this foggy bridge,
yep,
and keep going. So they never actually leave, it seems like. And that kind of calls back to the fact that like Sean Bean's husband character and Sharon were in the same physical location at the same time, but she was, you know, not in the real world, quote unquote, and he was, which is why you would juxtapose these two scenes together, and it's like, well, obviously they're in the same place, but he can't see her and she can't see him, and the ending is just like that too, where she's in their house but they can't see each other.
it's like a shadow. They're like shadows now.
Right. Well, I don't think Sharon even made it out at all, because it seemed like at the very end, when she gets confronted by the spirit of the town or whatever, that she kind of ceased to be. To me, that's what it seemed like, because she was never real in the first, but she was never her own person. She was just like a reflection of Alessa. So she got taken over, consumed. She kind of gives Dahlia this knowing look at the end. It's like, you know, shh, don't tell Rose. This is my new mom now, by the way. And
no, and
that's what I got out of it.
I think it was the real Sharon who left Silent Hill.
But there's no real Sharon. That's the thing. It's like, yes, there's just Alessa.
Well, in the games, she was a separate entity, but she was still one part of a whole. So you had both of these.
Some kind of unholy trinity here going on.
And yeah, and in the games, it's very symbolic.
The mother, the daughter, and the unholy Silent Hill ghost.
Well, and especially in the first game and the third game, they make that very, very apparent. They definitely put a lot of symbolic weight on that. And they were kind of trying to do that with the ending of the movie. They weren't allowed to leave because Sharon is now a part of that world.
Right. And Alessa gets something she always wanted, which is a decent mother who wouldn't give her up to the town folk and have her be killed.
There you go. In the games, it's... And they will make this... They will... Or we're told they will explain a lot of it in the second movie, Silent Hill Revelation 3D.
Yeah.
Another thing I will point out, at the end of the movie, they're going through this fog shadow version of their own house.
Right.
People, you know, my friends to this day keep on saying, as the camera pans away from their house, an eye can be seen in the bushes closing. And every single time, I cannot see that eye.
So if
anybody listening to this knows what I'm talking about, please chime in. If my friends are crazy, if I'm crazy, it kind of gave the impression that something Silent Hill is watching over Rose and Sharon now. It's still got its eye on them.
Also, Totaka's song is totally in Wii Sports. Totally.
As a kind of final note, I did like the fact that they did inject the music of Akira Yamamoto into the movie, particularly the music from the second game.
I liked the music. So that's something.
It's fantastic mood music. It's fantastic for Silent Hill, and I'm glad they imported it with a couple new additions that he came in and he recorded specifically for the movie.
Which, again, I think
was awesome.
Of course you would know that. Well, yes. I'm glad we brought you on the show. So before we get to the end of the show here, let's scratch off number 8. It's yellow, by the way.
Oh, that's never a good sign.
Oh, you were right. I don't even...
Oh, it smells like...
It just smells bad.
Okay, fair.
It's possible the chemicals have changed over time. So anyway, fly our Syndra, fly away. I'm sure we'll see you some other time.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone who contributed to our DLC episode. And we're more than 50 episodes in, and we got some incredible stuff coming up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Should we talk about that now or save it for next episode? To hear the end of the episode, please deposit 99 cents.
Let's talk about it next week when we can give it the time it needs.
Okay.
So, and if you're listening to this right before bed, Layla, please listen to what your dad says, brush your teeth, and make sure to be a good girl and go to bed so you can grow up big and strong.
Nice. So if you want to leave any of your thoughts on our two topics on Silent Hill, or especially the ending, or what you think those leaves that Larry Scratch and Sniff smells really were, or what you think about the added content, please leave a message in our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, 51 for this episode. And of course, as always, you can leave a wonderful comment on our iTunes, free iTunes storefront, and rate the show as well. Let everyone else know what you think. Talk to us on Twitter, Famicom Dojo, Facebook, Famicom Dojo, and of course, howit.tv, where this show is syndicated. Is that even right?
Syndicated. Probably not.
All right, and of course, last but not least, number 9. Let's get number 9.
Famicom Dojo.
Molasses? No idea.
See you next time, guys.